Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Montana Talks, uniting the Treasure State, one conversation at a time. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
We've got a special guest joining us here right at the beginning of the 7 a.m. hour. Representative Steve Fitzpatrick, Republican representative out of Cascade County, former Senator Steve Fitzpatrick. Representative Fitzpatrick, thanks for joining us this morning.
Hey, thanks. Appreciate the invitation. I didn't realize I was going to get one when I called you up yesterday.
Yeah, we're both lawyers, so we know a little bit about each other on that. And, you know, one thing I was going to ask you about first is it seems like every single time I read a news article or saw news on TV and about the legislative session, and I'm not just talking about 2025, I'm talking about 2023 and 2021 and everything else, and there was bills that were actually moving and passing and getting signed by the governor, it was always sponsored by Steve Fitzpatrick. And so I got to just ask, what's the secret? How are you such an effective and prolific legislator up there?
Well, I think it's about relationships. I mean, that's really what the business is about, is you need to develop relationships throughout the party, and then you really need to, you know, have them with the other side as well. And you need to get to a position where people trust you. And I think when you kind of hit that sweet spot, you start to be able to move bills. I think the other thing too is I don't bring a bill unless I think I can pass it. You know, a lot of people take a bill, they throw it up and see what happens. I put some thought into what I'm going to do, and I try and anticipate, you know, what the objections are going to be and what can bring the bill down. And I think if you put kind of that work into it, you build those relationships up, and then you really think about where the votes are, you can move the bills. So there are other people that are really good legislators in the chamber, and you know, they have success as well. So I appreciate you throwing that out at me, but there are a lot of great legislators, and I think they all operate the same way.
Yeah, so one of the things that, you know, we've been talking a lot about on the show, obviously, is property taxes. I guess I'd be curious to hear your take on sort of, you know, what really happened with the property tax relief here. And we've got only about a minute left, but if you can hang with us through the next break, we do that too.
Sure. You know, it was kind of a long process, but I think what you ended up with was kind of a compromise product. At the end of the day, you've got 231, 542. Those bills kind of work together. You know, it was kind of a long process to get there. That, you know, the Senate leadership had what they wanted. The governor kind of had what he wanted. And ultimately, I think the governor's vision won out. I mean, if you step back and look at it, I think most people that are residential property owners are going to be fairly happy with the ultimate product. I mean, the next year coming up, we're going to have some, I don't want to say substantial, but they're going to have some cuts in the taxable value calculation, which should bring down your property taxes, you know, anywhere from $500 to $750, depending on your jurisdiction. You're also going to get the $400 rebate this year. If you get into tax year 2026, those cuts get to be, you know, they're going to be more. The flip side is that, you know, if you own a second home, that's going to go up, or if you own a VRBO, that's going to go up. So I think overall, for the, you know, the typical residential property owner, you're probably going to like what came out of the legislation.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with Representative Steve Fitzpatrick.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. For today, a slight chance for a sprinkle ending early on. Otherwise, we'll see increasing sunshine into the afternoon, high temperatures into the upper 70s. Then for tonight, mostly clear skies, low to mid 50s. Saturday, a good deal of sunshine with upper 80s for highs for Bozeman, but we'll push up closer to the lower 90s for Billings. And that's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm weatherology meteorologist Michael Caro.
This is House Call for Health. The healthcare company for a major drugstore chain says it will no longer cover a major weight loss drug. CVS Caremark, one of the top pharmacy benefit managers in the country, says it's ending coverage for Eli Lilly's Zepbound. The company says GLP-1 drugs like Zepbound for people with type 2 diabetes or obesity have driven up the total costs for its plans. CVS says it will take exceptions on a case-by-case basis for Zepbound if it's a medical necessity. One doctor tells Fox Business some patients will need to change drugs, and for many, that's a high-stakes change that can affect long-term outcomes, trigger weight regain, or introduce new side effects. Zepbound is the brand name for Eli Lilly's tirzepatide. It was approved by the FDA in 2023 for chronic weight management in adults with obesity or with weight-related medical problems. Tirzepatide had already been approved to treat type 2 diabetes and was sold under a different brand name. For more health news, go to foxnewshealth.com. House call for health. I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News.
Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors. Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August. Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in. This podcast, like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls. The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search our names, Clay and Buck. Listen and subscribe.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
It's David Noble filling in for Aaron Flint. We've got Representative Steve Fitzpatrick out of Cascade, long-serving legislator from up there. Representative Fitzpatrick, thanks so much for being with us. One of the things that, you know, we've been talking a lot about on this show and we're getting lots of phone calls and messages about is just sort of some of the disappointments from the 2025 session. And I'd like to ask you about some of the successes as well. But first, I'm just kind of curious on your take. You know, we ended up getting Medicaid expansion. You know, we got we didn't get judicial reform across the finish line. You know, spending maybe went up quite a bit more than a lot of us had hoped. And so kind of what's your take on, I mean, even having a Republican majority, you know, the nine in the Senate and then in the Freedom Caucus has pointed out the dirty dozen, 12 in the House, you know, which your name was not on. And so just kind of curious on your take on kind of what happened there and anything we can do as conservatives to kind of make in 2027, hopefully get some of those more conservative bills across the finish line.
Yeah, you know, I think unfortunately there's kind of this narrative that developed around the session that it was all bad. I think if you step back from a Republican perspective and look at what happened, I actually think there's a lot to be proud of. We made a lot of, you know, we did a lot of work on things I think that conservatives would be excited about. Start on taxes. I mean, we cut income tax again. And if you're a small government conservative, that's what you want to see. You want to see income tax get cut because that's really the source of money that feeds state government. Unless we cut income tax, we're going to keep growing government. So it has to go down. And the tax bill that Representative Lear pushed through, that cuts taxes. It's going to cut the amount of money coming into state government. Hopefully that slows the growth of government. We also took a whack out of the unemployment insurance tax. That was a bill I sponsored. It takes about $26 million out of that. That should help small businesses. The other areas where we did a lot of work was on the Hill case. I mean, you practice law. You know what a devastating thing that's going to be if we got to do climate analysis on everything. I mean, that's a thermonuclear missile pointed at the economy of the state of Montana. We had a good package of bills to address that. We did some interesting things on fire policy. And really those conservative values, I think, that people care about. You know, we pushed back on the men and women sports. We fixed some of the tort law on these transgender surgeries. So I think there was really a lot going on. I think what people forget, and there's a lot of noise this time, but there's always schisms in the party. There's always division on in the party, no matter what, and it's there every year. It just seems like it's louder this year than it has been before. But I think if you're a Republican, there were missed opportunities. I think partisan judges was one. But I think there's still a lot to be proud of.
You know, hey, speaking of the judicial reform bills, and, you know, the partisan judges one was one that, you know, the governor had supported and everything like that. One bill that I thought was super interesting was by Senator Tom McGillivray to create the Chancery Court of Montana, kind of a specialized court that would hear constitutional cases and certain business cases. You know, lots of other states have sort of specialized chancery courts to handle those types of cases. I thought that was a good bill, but it ended up not going anywhere. Were you at all familiar with that, or did you follow that one much?
Yeah, I followed that one. I don't think he got it out of the Senate. I guess I had my thought on that one was that it seemed like we were creating another court and we were going to handle a bunch of cases. And I guess from my point of view as a lawyer, and this is just my view, is that if we're going to add judges, we ought to really add district court judges, because there's places where there's a lot of backlog.
Bozeman's got a lot of backlog.
No, I know. You know, many years up here in Great Falls, it would be years before you would get a ruling. Now, I think sometimes it's work habits of judges, but there are definitely places where you could use more. I think if you step back on partisan judges, since you mentioned that one before, I think the problem on there was we had the votes to do a partisan judge bill. It was really the form of what it looked like, and we couldn't get agreement in the party on what the form looked like. And as a consequence, everybody pushed one version that was never going to pass. Instead of sitting down and saying, okay, we can get the votes for this, let's do this. It may not be 100% of what people want, but it's about 80%. Instead, we had a bunch of people that wanted 100%, and when you want 100%, a lot of times you get zero. That's what happened.
Yeah, that kind of thing, it just kind of strikes me as, I mean, from the outsider looking in, that just kind of strikes me as people just not being good legislators, not taking into account, you know, what can actually pass, or, you know, just personality or personal issues. And it's like, come on, guys.
Well, that's the frustrating part. I mean, I would go into meetings on SB 42. That was the partisan judge bill. And I can tell you that thing was never going to pass. And it was never going to pass because it made everything partisan, district court, justice court. But on the Senate side, that was the only one they wanted to consider. And so it came over from the House, it came over out of the Senate, and it gets into the House and just got annihilated. But by that time, you know, the desire to pass those bills had dissipated, and it was too late to pass one that we had the votes for. You know, the thing is over time in the legislature, it starts to get a reversion to the middle, and it doesn't matter if it's conservative power or liberal power. It starts to revert towards the middle over time because, you know, people just get tired of the pounding that they get in the newspaper, and you know, then there's all kinds of forces that affect our people. And if you're going to wait to shove a partisan judge bill through at the end, it was never going to work.
Representative Fitzpatrick, can you stick with us for one more segment?
Yeah.
All right, we'll take a quick break here. We do have a caller on the line as well. Mike is on the road, wants to ask a question. I've got some other questions for Representative Fitzpatrick. Want to give him a chance to tell about some of his bills that passed, and we'll be right back.
Media Minute with Howard Kurtz.
New York Times is very much on the defensive for a story about the New York mayoral candidate, the Democratic nominee, Zohran Mamdani. The story itself is just not that big a deal. It has to do with Mamdani having checked black or African-American on a Columbia University application. He didn't get in, and that's not how he describes himself. But the reliance on a hacker, and not just any hacker, is why the Times standards editor posted an 11-tweet defense of what they had done. This hacker is described by the Times as often writing about IQ and race. Others use much more, let's say, explicit language. And the idea that Times would do this, it's not about national security, it's just campaign fodder, I think is why the paper is under so much criticism over the story about a 15-year-old application. With your Media Minute, Howie Kurtz, Fox News.
Montana Talks is the show where we get a chance to hear from leading statewide lawmakers. We also get a chance to hear from folks inside the Trump administration. But you know where our best information comes from? It comes from you. You get a chance to call into the show. You get a chance to be heard all across Montana because the show is called Montana Talks, the show where you get to talk. You can message us on the Montana Talks app, or you can even call in at 406-294-0970. Montana Talks. Talk statewide, 9 to 10.
How serious is youth vaping? Irreversible lung damage serious. 1 in 10 kids vape serious. Which warrants a serious conversation from a serious parental figure like yourself. Not the seriously know-it-all sports dad or the seriously smart podcaster. It requires a serious conversation that is best had by you. No, seriously. The best person to talk to your child about vaping is you. To start the conversation, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordlund.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture has once again shut down southern ports of entry to cattle shipments and other livestock after a new detection of New World screwworm was discovered in northern Veracruz, Mexico. The pest has now moved roughly 160 miles north of where sterile flies are currently being released, raising serious concerns about its spread toward the U.S. border, which lies about 370 miles north of the latest detection. Secretary of Agriculture Brooke Rollins made the decision based on guidance from USDA veterinary staff in Mexico. The move follows an earlier closure and reopening of the ports this year in response to previous outbreaks. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association says the screwworm's continued movement puts U.S. agriculture at risk, calling the closure necessary to protect the national cattle herd. NCBA praised Secretary Rollins for removing red tape and increasing surveillance in Mexico, but said the U.S. can't rely solely on Mexico to manage the threat. The group urged USDA to fast-track construction of its sterile fly production facility on U.S. soil. The USDA has already identified Moore Air Base in Texas as the site for a new dispersal facility, and the NCBA said it will continue working with USDA to monitor the situation and protect American cattle producers. I'm Lee Nordlund.
Broadcasting live across the big sky, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
David Noble in for Aaron Flint. We got Representative Steve Fitzpatrick on the line, and we've also got Mike, who's on the road, on the line. Let me see if I can get both of them on so they can hear each other here. Mike, thanks for calling in. What'd you got?
Well, I'd like to ask Steve about, it seems to me that you guys kind of just move the chess pieces around. You mentioned that you're raising taxes on people's second homes, and I can tell you that my kids worked really hard to get a little cabin up in the mountains. And right now, with this new tax increase you put on a second home, they're going to be making more payment in taxes and insurance on that little piece of property than what they paid for it. And it's a Montana family that's worked hard. I guess this tax on second homes was supposed to be getting the rich people and that come in from out of state. But what it's going to do, it's going to make people like my kids have to sell something they've worked their whole life for and wanted to hand down to their kids. This cabin is basically right next to ground that my kid's granddad homesteaded. And now they're thinking about selling it due to these tax increases and an increase in insurance to the point that it's more than the payment. And so I think what happens is you guys just move the chess pieces around. What people, hardworking people really want is they want their taxes cut. And I realize you made some tax cuts, but then you move it around and make increases somewhere else. And so I'd like to know how you can justify that.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Thank you so much. Appreciate the call. Representative Fitzpatrick, were you able to hear that?
Yeah. So the way the property tax system works is that it does move around. The best way to explain it is your budget's $1 million. The property taxes, property tax is not like income tax. It's just not a rate increase where you pay a rate and that's how it goes. It's a system where it shifts relative to other people. So if you want a tax cut on your primary on your residential property, somebody else is going up. That's just the nature of the system.
Isn't it true that the local governments would have to cut spending? Like the cities and the counties would have to cut spending as well, which they're not doing.
Or the local governments are going to have to cut spending. That's the other thing. So if you want your residential income for property tax to go down, somebody else's is going up. That's just the way the system works. So you know, I get that people are frustrated about second homes, but if you want to cut your, if you want to cut it all on your residential property tax, somebody else is going up. It's either industrial, it's commercial, or it's a second home. Now, the reason the second homes came in is because if you just cut residential so much, you're going to drive up commercial. You're going to drive up industrial. So, you know, it's a balancing system. You got to decide what you want. Now, I think most people in the state are going to be happy with having a cut on their primary residence. There are going to be people, of course, that are going to be upset, but I don't think we're just moving the chess pieces around. We're giving people tax cuts on their houses.
Yeah, I mean,
houses, and it's going to be substantial.
Yeah, I mean, people like me who, you know, I own one home, and that's my homestead home, and it's not a $1 million home. I expect to see a property tax cut, but we had Senator Barry Usher on yesterday, and he was kind of making the point about how it's more of a tax shift and this and that, but you know, people, you know, individuals are going to see it. So, well, hey, Representative Fitzpatrick, we got 2 minutes left here. Before I let you go here at the 7:30 break, I wanted to just get your thoughts on the next session. What do you anticipate there? Any plans you have for the next session in 27?
Yeah, I think it's kind of hard to see what's ahead, but I think we're definitely going to have questions about how the Big Beautiful Bill affects state government. You know, obviously the income tax level is going to be affected because we're tied in with federal tax. Medicaid is going to be affected in ways. So I think there's actually a lot coming down the pipe, especially with the changes at federal level. I think some of those are going to be interesting on how we address them. So I think there's a lot to do next session. I think there's obviously more work to do on property tax. We probably need to go in and take a look at some of the things we did and maybe see if we can adjust them again. So I think there's a lot to do coming up next session.
Well, thank you so much, Representative Fitzpatrick. Before I let you go, any closing thoughts?
No, I'm just glad you invited me, and I'm glad I'm talking to you on the radio instead of having to face off with you against in court. I mean, last time we went head-to-head, you killed me, so.
There it is. Well, thanks so much for calling in, Representative Fitzpatrick. We'll catch you later.
Hey, thanks, man. Have a good one.
Yeah, you too. You know, this is Montana Talks, and we have the greatest callers, we have the greatest guests, we have the greatest guest hosts, so that's how it goes. We are going to have another great guest at 8 o'clock, but between now and then, I got some messages here from Jeremy in Roundup, from Michael in Bozeman. We're taking phone calls as well, 406-294-0970. You know, just like Representative Fitzpatrick took a phone call, Commissioner of Securities and Insurance James Brown is going to be taking your phone calls. Send in the messages. I'll read them and react. David Noble filling in for Aaron Flint. We'll be right back. David Noble back here live broadcasting to our audience worldwide. Couple of other Montana stories that we're going to be talking about here. Attorney General Austin Knutson. I swear, it's every time I guest host this show, we've got something out of the Attorney General to talk about. Montana Attorney General Austin Knutson is leading a 23-state coalition in support of a parent who was stripped of longstanding fundamental right to direct his daughter's upbringing when school officials in Delaware withheld information on his child's gender identity decision from him. Again, one of these terrible, terrible situations. Imagine you're a parent and your kid is going to public schools and the public schools are transing your kid and telling your kid he's a different gender than he really is or she is, and that's what's happening. And then they hide it from the parents. Of course, this is what led to the Florida situation before the 2024 election that was so influential. But Montana Attorney General filed an amicus brief here in the case of Heaps versus Delaware Valley Regional High School Board of Education in support of Christian Heaps, a father who filed a lawsuit to overturn a school board policy that allows school officials to withhold gender identity of children from their parents. It's absolutely preposterous. And originally they were actually doing this secretly. If you recall the Florida story before the 2024 election, the schools in Florida were doing this secretly. They were not disclosing to the parents that they were changing their kids' identity at school, that they were using different pronouns for these kids, et cetera, et cetera. but they never actually put it into just blatant policy. Apparently, this Delaware school actually put it into policy and said, this is our policy to hide this information from parents. Attorney General Austin Knutson wrote, quote, "The district's policy upends centuries of natural and constitutional law. The policy gives ultimate decision-making authority to children and displaces parents of their longstanding primary role in ensuring their child's safety and well-being. In doing so, the district grants itself control over managing the child's gender confusion or dysphoria, a role it has neither the qualification, rights, nor emotional interest in serving." So fantastic news there, of course. Always appreciate the Attorney General's stories. And, you know, what's sort of unfortunate is this whole parental rights issue, you know, hasn't really gotten, I don't think it's due in federal court, in the U.S. Supreme Court. In fact, I thought I had a story here about, I think the state of Montana had petitioned the U.S. Supreme Court to take up some of these abortion laws that we have here in Montana that got struck down by the Montana Supreme Court in terms of like notifying parents if your daughter is going to get an abortion and things like that. And I believe, don't quote me on this one, but I believe the state of Montana asked the Supreme Court to take that up as a violation of parental rights under the U.S. Constitution. I believe they rejected it. But boy, wouldn't that be nice to get a U.S. Supreme Court decision that says parental rights are fundamental rights, and these states cannot violate your fundamental rights as a parent to raise your own kid. Seems pretty common sense, but the fact you got to argue about it is ridiculous.
You're listening to Montana Talks, bringing truth and freedom to Montana. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
David Noble filling in for Aaron Flint. That's Noble with a K. I'm an attorney here in Billings. We're taking phone calls and your messages. We're going to go straight to Jerry in Circle. Is that Jerry, the Representative Schillinger, Jerry?
Yes, it is, David. Good morning. You've been having a great show the last couple of days. I've just been kind of getting bits and pieces as we get ready to harvest here, so I've been in and away from the radio, but I really enjoyed it, and I just got in on towards the tail end of your stint with Steve Fitzpatrick there here a little bit ago, so that was good. And I had a question, actually, if you don't mind backing up just a little bit. He made some comments about the partisan judge bills that failed there, and I was just curious what context we had there.
Well, so I had talked to Representative Fitzpatrick before, and it was I'm not sure on the details, but my understanding is there is basically two different bills to create partisan judicial elections. One of them, I think, was maybe just the Supreme Court. The other one was the Supreme Court and all of the district court judges, and it sort of sounded like lack of communication, lack of sort of effective legislating, and the differences between the governor's office and what the legislators wanted, because that was one of those things where it's like, look, we got a Republican legislature, we got a governor that supports the partisan judicial elections. It was kind of weird from somebody like me looking, you know, in from the outside to see that fail. But that was his explanation. I mean, I don't know what's your thoughts on it?
Well, yeah, I won't discount what Representative Fitzpatrick said. He might be right, but what it appeared to me was exactly what Senator Usher, Senator Usher shared yesterday, that was one of the things that got traded away to the Democrats and the Nasty Nine accomplices in the House voted to kill those bills. And
So you're basically saying like the Democrats agreed to vote for like the stuff the Nasty Nine wanted as long as the Nasty Nine killed partisan judicial races? Is that basically what you're saying?
That's part of the pieces there, yeah. And then actually it was interesting on the last day, the last day of the session, we had about three or four bills that needed third reading yet, and then we were done, and we were going to adjourn. And that was one of the things that was tried to get brought back and offered to the conservatives to bring that one of those bills back if we would vote for that big 932 bill that that swept hundreds of millions of dollars of taxpayer dollars into a fund rather than refunding them, and we refused. So there was deal-making going on in the corner of the ante room right till the very end there with the Democrats, and we refused to bend on that.
You know, the worst part about that is none of that stuff was made public. It seemed to me like there was just nothing but backroom deals during the entire 2025 legislative session, and the things that we were being told publicly were not the same things that these legislators were saying behind closed doors. That's the sense I got, and it really didn't make me all that happy.
Well, unfortunately, that is the way a lot of it ends up going. It's the shenanigans happen out of sight. And it isn't just in 25 seconds. It's been going on a long time. And some of the players have kind of perfected the art, you could say, as Chairman Jones. And he's been in there 20-some years. And he's basically been playing both sides for the whole time. But anyway, one of the things I wanted to get to this morning, David, real quick, was two mornings ago you were talking about the wind projects.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's one of my pet issues right there. And this morning it was solar panel. I spent most of the 6 o'clock hour on solar panels. So,
well, this kind of ties in together because I sponsored a bill. Well, back up just a second. Wind generating electricity. The wind generators you see are for property taxes are in a different class of tax than solar energy or Colstrip or the gas-fired plants in Billings. So the towers you see are taxed at only a 3% rate, whereas solar and coal and gas are taxed, generators are taxed at a 6% rate. So in the spirit of tax reform that we've been talking about, I sponsored a bill that would have taken the wind generators and put them in the same class as the other energy manufacturers pay so that they all are on the same competitive level in property taxes, plus obviously would have generated a lot more property taxes. And the thing about it is just about every kilowatt of energy that comes off of those wind generators is going out of state to the West Coast. So besides all the huge subsidies they get from the federal government, we're subsidizing that electricity that goes out to the West Coast so that these big companies can cover their landscape with these wind generators. So I sponsored the bill, and unfortunately it didn't get out of House tax. It was killed in House tax by some of our big government Republicans along with all the Democrats. There's a handful of the conservatives on that committee that supported the bill and the fairness of it, but unfortunately it died right there. But I'm going to resurrect that one for sure.
I don't get it. What's the argument against it? Even a Democrat or a big government Republican, unless they've been paid off by the windmill industry, which sometimes I wonder with a lot of these Democrats how much money they're taking from the windmill industry. But what was their reasoning for opposing that? Because that just sounds like perfectly a good common sense bill.
That's a good question, David. And actually, I was going to bring that up, too. Of course, all the lobbyists for NextEra, Invenergy showed up and just whined and cried crocodile tears that this was just going to kill their industry if they had to pay the same tax as their competitors did. And unfortunately, again, this was kind of in the later days of the session, and I should have had it out earlier, but unfortunately, the majority on the committee bought their whining and voted to kill the bill.
I'm so sick of these people complaining that their businesses can't operate. I mean, I don't know if you heard this morning, but there's this story in the UK newspapers, an international story about this guy in Missoula who's got a solar panel company, and he, you know, the big beautiful bill got rid of this 30% subsidies for residential solar panels, and the guy is out there admitting, like, my solar panel company is going to go under unless there's this 30% subsidy. I'm just sitting there scratching my head. Why should I have to pay for my neighbor's solar panels? If I want to get solar panels, I'll pay for them myself. And if my neighbor wants to get solar panels, they got to pay for themselves too. So what's up with these businesses that only operate on government subsidies? It's like, sorry, folks, if your business can't operate unless you're getting my taxpayer dollars, maybe you got a bad business.
Well, unfortunately, the federal government especially has done a masterful job over the decades of getting as many people on the federal dole as possible, and that's part of the reason. And it's hard to kill their programs, hard to kill the bureaucracy. And so one of the things that disappointed me in getting back to the wind energy again, you commented about, it being Biden's new green scam and the Democrats passing it. But people also have to be aware that our senators from North Dakota, both Republicans and about four others across the country, I can't remember which ones now, were part of the reason that more of that new green scam didn't get killed in the big, beautiful bill, because they covered for the wind giants.
So you're telling me
there's plenty of blame to go around.
So you're telling me some of our U.S. senators who claim to be Republicans are actually undocumented Democrats?
Absolutely. Same as in Montana.
Right. Well, thanks so much, Representative Schillinger, for calling in. Jerry from Circle, anything else before I let you go?
You know, just keep up the good work, David. I really appreciate it, what you're doing, and we just all have to keep after it and help deliver to Montanans what they think they voted for.
Amen to that. Thank you so much. And right back at you as well. Just a couple of seconds left here in this segment. Great call from Representative Schillinger, member of the House Freedom Caucus in Montana, not part of Lou's Dirty Dozen in the House. And we do have the Nasty Nine in the Senate and Lou's Dirty Dozen in the House. But good to talk to people like Representative Fitzpatrick, Representative Schillinger, Senator Barry Usher yesterday. These guys are good legislators who are doing good conservative policies up there in Helena. We got one more segment here left. If you want to call in, get on here before Commissioner of Insurance and Securities, Montana State Auditor James Brown, joins the show for the 8 o'clock hour. Of course, we'll be taking your phone calls the entire 8 o'clock hour, too. James Brown's not afraid to take phone calls like many of us are not. We got messages here I still got to get to. Sorry, Michael, Jeremy, Marcus, we'll get to you next.
Breaking news.
An upgrade storm's on the way.
With Xfinity Mobile Premium Unlimited, you can upgrade your phone up to 2 times a year.
How's it looking out there, Rick?
The Wi-Fi is still booming!
Now through September 30th, existing Xfinity Internet customers can get an unlimited line included for a year. Learn more at XfinityMobile.com. Restrictions apply. Requires Xfinity 300 megabit internet or above. Taxes, fees, extra. After promo, regular rates apply. Reduced speeds after use of monthly data included with data option. Due thresholds may vary.
Fox News commentary.
In the game of cops and robbers, the Democrats root for the robbers. I'm Tommy Lahren. More next.
The world of business moves fast. Stay on top of it with the Fox Business Rundown every Monday and Friday. Fox Business reporters, anchors, and hosts will bring you beneath the stock market speculation and boardroom drama to tell you about the biggest business stories of today. Whether you're on Main Street or Wall Street, Fox Business is invested in you.
Listen to the Fox Business Rundown every Monday and Friday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Democrats have decided the bad guys aren't the criminal, illegal aliens, but rather the men and women of ICE, law enforcement, and Border Patrol who are simply doing their jobs and risking their lives while they're at it. Now, being in any kind of law enforcement is dangerous, but it sure doesn't make matters for these folks any easier or safer when you have Democrats calling them the Gestapo or the secret police or accusing them of terrorizing communities. They truly and deeply believe, or at least they hope you will believe, it's the law enforcement agents who are the terrorists and not the criminal, illegal aliens. Assaults on our immigration agents on have gone up 500%, and that number is climbing. Just this week, we've had two incidents. And that's what happens when elected so-called leaders lie to their minions that random people are being scooped up by masked men and sent to concentration camps. This is a deliberate lie, and they ought to be ashamed of themselves. I'm Tommy Lahren, and you can watch my show, Tommy Lahren is Fearless, at Outkick.com.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. For today, a slight chance for a sprinkle ending early on. Otherwise, we'll see increasing sunshine into the afternoon, high temperatures into the upper 70s. Then for tonight, mostly clear skies, low to mid-50s. Saturday, a good deal of sunshine with upper 80s for highs for Bozeman, but we'll push up closer to the lower 90s for Billings. And that's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm weatherology meteorologist Michael Caro.
Hey, I know how it goes, man. You're driving around Montana. Maybe you're pulling the camper or something like that. You're going on a trip, but you still want to listen to your Montana news and commentary. Well, you can get all 4 hours of Montana Talks on the Montana Talks app. So whether you're in cell range or out of cell range, you just want something to listen to, all 4 hours of Montana Talks right there at your fingertips. Put it on your smartphone. It'll even...
As we start here.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
David Noble filling in for Aaron Flint here on Montana Talks. We have got Jerry and Laurel calling in. Jerry and Laurel, thanks for calling.
Good morning, David. It's great to talk to you here this morning. This conversation with property taxes, it's never-ending, and I hope it doesn't, because I don't know about you, but as a taxpayer, I'm extremely disappointed with how this last legislative session went. And it just seems like the end gets kicked down the road. But the reason I'm calling, I just happened to get my letter from the Montana Department of Revenue about how much my taxes, my property taxes, are going up. I've got some property in Columbus that I plan on building a house on. But next year, the state taxes on the property are going up 6.34%, county 3.45%, schools 3.25%, city of Columbus 5.08. And so when I add it all up, they're going to raise my property taxes 15% in 1 year. And I think what's most frustrating as a taxpayer is we all have our household budgets, and we have to balance them. And we have, you know, if things get too expensive, we cut it out. We just, you know, we just do away with it. But hearing all of these legislators come in and all of that, well, the thing that I don't hear was, how are we going to cut it out and stop this endless rise in taxes? It's just a rare conversation. We can't sustain a situation where we're seeing our taxes and things like that going up every year, compounded 15% year after year after year. It's just crazy.
Yeah, no, I agree. And the I also agree with when Representative Fitzpatrick said, you know, most of these taxes go to your local governments and local schools and things like that. And really, you know, that, and frankly, so I'm kind of surprised to hear even in Columbus, Stillwater County area, you're having increases, because that's a conservative area. Of course, here in Billings, you know, we got a liberal city council here too.
Sure. But you just don't hear the discussion. We need to cut. We can't continue. Right. If you've been in any of the government buildings or school district administrative buildings, they're loaded with administrators. I mean, what we need is Elon Musk chainsaw and cut these things up and break them up and make them smaller.
I'm with you.
Ridiculous.
I'm with you, Jerry. I'm 100% with you. You're preaching to the choir. Let's sneak on Steve from Ballantyne here before the top of the hour. Steve, thanks for calling.
Morning, David. Well, there was something on the news yesterday that just, it kind of made me start thinking and just kind of tripped my trigger a little bit. And it's to do with the illegals and the left, okay? They're basically saying that the illegals, you know, they have a right to our Constitution, and a lot of them are saying a right to freedom of speech, okay? But now the Constitution meant nothing to them when they were trying to get Biden installed. He was installed. He didn't win the election. We all know that. He was installed. Okay, so we tried to voice our opinion, freedom of speech, you know, they buried the laptop, you know, they buried everything. And then we end up with this sack of bones. He lets all these illegals come in there. Now the Constitution means something to him now. It didn't mean anything to him before the election. And it just irritates me.
Oh, that's a just classic Democrat move, too. Just total hypocrisy.
Yeah. So anyway, so we're stuck with, they want to use the Constitution now to protect all their illegals, but yet they wouldn't let us use the Constitution to protect the American people.
That's exactly right. It really is. No, that's exactly right. Thanks so much for the call. Stephen Ballantyne, one of the all-time great callers here to Montana Talk, so appreciate that. There's a huge story out of Helena that's making waves on social media about there was an illegal alien that was arrested, and some attorneys are trying to claim that it was due to racial profiling, when literally all it was a guy got pulled over for not having for having expired license plates, and he met the description of a potential suspect. And when they looked into it, he's an illegal alien, and they arrested him. It's not racial profiling, but that's what's going on out there, folks. We'll be right back.
Substance use disorder and addiction is so isolating. And so, as a Black woman in recovery, hope must be loud. It grows louder when you ask for help and you're vulnerable. It is the thread that lets you know that no matter what happens, you will be okay.
When we learn the power of hope, recovery is possible. Find out how at startwithhope.com. Brought to you by the National Council for Mental Wellbeing, Shatterproof, and the Ad Council.
If you can plan barbecues and weddings, you can plan to protect yourself from a natural disaster. Sign up for local alerts, prepare an emergency kit, and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.